has joined.
Randall
has joined. Has joined.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So we are beginning with, excuse me. With the section 23 from the Parasha Vayirat and the Tulam commentary on the Zohar, we're beginning with Pasuk 319. We'll start with L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kudsha b'richu ishkinte bitchidu urchimu utkilu utkilu urchimu le'akta l'shem yud hei b'vavhe. The Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'asok Torah Mitzvah, Vayhino Am Adonai Elohim, Olein Ma'asei Yadenu Kunenei, Olein Ma'asei Yadenu Kunenei. Amar Rabbi Abahu, Ma'akiti Willod Yada B'Shikva, Uvkuma Telo Omar, Yaitzer Ahara, Ino Mashkiach, Babashikba, Baolam Hazeh, Ukumala Olam, Habaela, Mito Rerbim Koach, Hagufle Avod, Ta'awato, Ba'olam hazeh, Tiyama Rabbi Abahu, V'shasheki nikdasin arshayim, Gehinom maknis seem la yetzer hara lirot bahen hadahu diktiv velot batoara letara shel gehinom unfak leyamitaman benasu tali briata kidka amaran hadahu dipivaya alot mitsoar mitsaara shel gehinom. The translation: Rabbi Abahu then said, "It is written, he perceived not when she lay down, nor when she arose." This means that the evil inclination is not aware of its lying down in this world, nor of its rising up to the world that is coming. It is aroused through the power of the body to accomplish its lustful desires in this world. As Rabbi Abahu said, when the sinners enter into Gehinom, the evil inclination is brought there to see them. As it is written, when Lot entered into Tzoar, similar to Tzar, which means agony, that is, into the agony of Gehinom, and from there it rises to seduce people. Therefore it is written, and Lot went up out of Tzoar, out of the agony of Gehinom. My commentary is that this, with Rabbi Ashlag's comments, this pasuk is clear as written. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Why must the evil inclination enter Gehinom? If the person was there in Gehinom because of what he did, why is it necessary for the evil inclination to show up there?
So the question is, why is it necessary for the evil inclination to go to Gehinom? Because it needs to testify against the soul. It needs to testify as to the actions of the soul. It needs to generate the plan that will motivate the soul to become the most that it can become, the highest it can rise. Where do you think purgatory is? Where do you think the Bet Din actually resides? It's referred to as purgatory, but it's essentially one of the levels of Gehinom.
Okay. I think I had a belief system that you knew what you had done and were paying the price for it and being cleansed of it. I thought you yourself was the one who would be, what would you say, knowledgeable where you had fallen short.
Your soul is aware, but not while it's in the body. And when it leaves the body, it's confused. There's a record, obviously, of what was done. There's a record of the feelings. But the two inclinations are, part of the testifying. But it's also more involved than just the testifying. It's also planning what will motivate that soul, what events need to come into the soul so that it will be motivated to achieve its highest possible level. That's the plan. That plan is what the evil inclination is presenting to the court. It's a plan based on strict judgment. So, an example, and I'm just making this up, but an example, someone kills someone. So the killer is being sentenced. There's no argument that he killed, but what will cleanse the killing? Well, strict judgment would say that what cleanses the killing is that he be killed. But there might be a way of injecting mercy into that scenario of what is going to motivate that killer to realize that he did wrong and he will never do it again. He doesn't have to go and be cleansed completely through his own death. That's based on strict judgment. But there are other scenarios. People become changed by observing other people, don't they? Sometimes that observation of another person's situation will change the soul of that person. That's a scenario that is essentially cleansing the murder, because that's no longer the same person who committed the murder. I hope that's clear.
Yeah, I think in my mind, I had that you went before the Beit Din before you went to Gehinnom, and Gehinnom was there where you would have suffered cold or hot or whatever to cleanse yourself. So I guess that was the picture I had in my head.
and that's a picture I think many people have. And it comes from the idea that Gehinnom or hell is different than purgatory. And I've never seen the word purgatory from Hebrew.
No, that was a Catholic word anyway.
Right.
They never said Gehinnom, it was always purgatory.
And what is actually the concept of purgatory? It's a place where you're judged, isn't it?
Well, I think we were basically taught, and that was many years ago for me, probably elementary school, catechism, maybe high school, and it was the idea that you went there before you could get to heaven. And that was where, I don't think we thought of it as a cleansing. It was more like a punishment.
Right.
It never was really taught. It was just kind of, at least I don't remember. And I was very safe because we lived just across the street from the church. So, I never missed, because of that.
But the understanding is that you have to go to purgatory before you go, purgatory before you go to heaven. Well, what happens in purgatory? And what in Judaism? What do we say? every soul has to go to Gehinnom. Even if it's just for an instant. Even the righteous go to Gehinnom. Why do they go to Gehinnom? So that those souls who have completed their tour, so to speak, in Gehinnom have no way to get to heaven unless it's with the light or the connection to a particular tzaddik. So when that tzaddik goes to Gehinnom and immediately elevates to heaven, that immediate elevation is taking the souls who are free from Gehinnom, who have achieved their cleansing. Essentially, you know, there's similarity in what the church did teach. Everyone goes to purgatory. Everyone goes to Gehinnom in Judaism. If for an instant. But these are subjects that people don't like to talk about. As a child, even as a teenager, would you have ever asked the priest what happens in purgatory?
No.
It's just something you don't do. It's frowned upon. You know better. And in Judaism, in the typical American Judaism of the Reform or the various sects of Judaism, you don't ask the rabbi these questions.
No, it never comes up. But you know, I had more Jewish women ask me questions about the life after death than any others that would come to my class, or any other of my friends. You know, even the Jewish people were ignorant of life after death.
And what has been changing over the last 40 years? People are becoming aware that there is life after death, and they read and hear about the near-death experiences. But even that's not really understood. Because the near-death experiences don't describe Gehinnom, do they?
No.
You know, the closest you get is a description of how no one will come testify for you. And you're afraid, and it becomes dark, and you know, all the different groups. People don't understand. If someone has a near-death experience, what comes back into their body is not the same soul. It's not the same collection of soul sparks. That's why everybody says how they changed, or the people around them say he's really different. Because it's no longer the same collection of soul sparks. Should I go on to 320?
Well, I don't have anything else to ask unless there's something more that you want to bring out or Brandy might want to ask.
Brandy asked. Go ahead, Brandy.
Go ahead.
You don't want to ask me about the Jupiter and Saturn being next to each other?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, tonight is supposed to be Jupiter and Saturn are going to come so close to each other that they look like one complete star. And that hasn't happened for over 400 years.
So, actually, last time in 1405.
Right. Okay.
And we've got an email from our rabbi explaining and telling us to look.
Yeah, well, they told us to look tonight towards the south, I believe, southwest. But we have clouds, so I can't see. But they were calling it, of course, they always nickname things, but tonight is the winter solstice.
That's correct.
And
it's called
the
Great Conjunction.
Right, but they have a name. They're calling it the Christmas Star.
It's on the front page of our newspaper, even. So
the Christmas Star.
A lot of publicity.
Well, I. The astrologers don't call it that.
Okay, what do they call it?
The Great Conjunction.
Oh, wow.
Of Jupiter and Saturn. Is it good for the Jews? The Great Conjunction of Jupiter, which is Tzedek, and Saturn, which is Shabtai, which has been in the news lately, has special meaning in Jewish astrological thought. This cosmic convergence in which Jupiter and Saturn appear almost on top of each other in the night sky has long been a focus of Jewish messianic speculation. The conjunction takes place in the zodiac sign of Aquarius, which is Dali, the water carrier, on the winter solstice, for the first time since the year 1405. This is significant because of the special relationship of both the planet Saturn and the constellation Aquarius to the Jewish people. And the belief in this event heralds the advent of political and social change. Perhaps the emergence of a new dynasty, a nation, or a great prophet. There is no more important celestial event in our lifetimes, part of the inexorable movement towards an Aquarian age. But is it good for the Jews? So let's go back to 1405. What happened in the 1400s? What was the great event, or the double event, that took place in 1492? Which is...
Founding America.
Columbus finds America. And the Inquisition expels the Jews from Spain. The duality of the events. Now that's 87 years between 1405 and 1492, 87 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, has time speeded up?
Yeah.
So we won't have to wait 87 years this time, will we?
Nope.
So is Elijah about to appear?
You haven't been seeing him yet?
I'm always looking out for him.
That was a facetious statement.
No. But I am always looking for him. Every time I see a beggar or someone on the street with a sign, or someone would knock on the door of the synagogue and I'd be cleaning and they'd want a handout.
Exactly.
You know.
We've all seen Elijah in one form or another. just rarely recognize it.
And I think I recognized him in New York when we went to convert, you know, the conversion. I told you about the individual that was always on the subway every time
right.
I got on until we got ready to leave when we were going to the airport. And he wasn't on that time. And when I stepped out of the car, he was outside the car and he told me Shalom Aleichem.
Let me finish reading what's been written.
Oh, okay.
Saturn ruled Tevet, whose tribal ruler is border guarding Dan, comes to teach us the importance of boundaries, structures, personal responsibility in our lives. The full moon in compassionate Cancer on December 29th, which nobody's talking about, except it's just 8 days away, is that's a little bit significant, emphasizes empathy and asks us to remember the marginalized. Mercury, the planet Kohav, conjuncts Pluto on January 4th. Proves the power of words to both wound and heal. Choose them wisely. We've been in the anteroom of the Aquarian Age for decades, but now the door is officially opened. Tevet invites us to enter carrying our luggage from the previous epoch. We'll be sorting and tossing what we don't need for our brave new world. For a long while yet. But you can be sure we're not turning back now that we see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's a great event, the conjunction. It will cause us to evaluate our values, discard those values who no longer are worth holding on to. This process of judgment, self-judgment, will continue. It's been happening. That's what the age of Aquarius represents, self-judgment. Evaluating what values you hold and which values is worth you holding on to. Now, if you want, I can read you what they say about each individual sun sign.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you have to tell me, what are your sun signs? One is Aquarius, I know. Right?
Yes, mine is Aquarius. And Brandy is
Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
Scorpio. Well, here's the Aquarius. Jupiter, Sedek, Saturn, Shabtai in Aquarius, this supercharges your energy field with a once-in-a-lifetime dose of brilliance, positivity, idealism, originality, and creativity. Drop everything else you're doing and make space to receive this cosmic gift. Manifesting your idealistic dreams is your task now. Wrestle with differing ideas January 12th as Mercury Kohav square to Uranus and surrender to your own brilliant revelations at the time of Venus, which is Noga to Uranus on January 13th, right before Uranus stations direct on January 14th. Allowing rapid progress and unimpeded access to resources. And Scorpio, the Jupiter, Sedek, Saturn, Shabtai conjunction stimulates concern for home and family, a heightened need to control how safe you feel in your domestic environment, and ensuring it meets your security standards is triggered when Mars, Ma'adim, squares the controlling Saturn on January 15th. The Sun's conjunction to powerful Pluto on January 14th makes you feel confronted by responsibility, confounded by commitment and resistance to pressure, pushing you to compromise your desires in favor of external, superficial obligations. Now is the time to distinguish who truly deserves your energy, your passion, your time, and your attention. It's no time for games. If you know your moons, we can read the appropriate discussion for your moons.
Okay, now, the moon, you mean your north sign?
I'm sorry?
I'm not familiar with moon sign, just north mode.
Your moon sign is part of your chart. If you ever have gone to, you know, any of the free astrological websites, they would put in your birth date as best you can, including the time of your birth, and they will give you all 12 components
well,
of your chart.
When but you first entered to Zionesis, he was offering doing... He had a program,
and he did.
So I need to get it out and look at it again. I usually do it on my birthday, and that's coming up next month. So, but I'll do it sooner.
Okay, but essentially, your sun sign is how you are. The world sees you. It's the way you look externally to other people. Your moon sign is what you're feeling internally. Or a better description is how you perceive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I will read you the Sagittarius sun sign, and I'll also read you the Gemini moon sign, which is me. Jupiter Tzedek conjunction makes you the big fish wherever your little pond happens to be. Interfering with your immediate environment becomes as interesting as a foreign journey. Jupiter in Aquarius for most of 2021 supersizes idealism, enlarges friendships, emphasizes community, and magnifies your unique individuality. Mercury conjuncting Jupiter on January 11th amplifies your voice. Speaking with authority and confidence now, your declarations ring like a bat kol of divine truth. Careful to use your words to build up and nurture others. You don't need to aggrandize yourself. Others will do that for you. Make sure you don't do that, guys. I don't need any more building of my ego.
Well, we do like you for what you do, you know. I hope that I don't think that builds up your ego. We do like to say thank you.
And I appreciate that, but the other side of it is if I allow that your appreciation, which I do appreciate, but if I allow it to penetrate, it will aggrandize myself. And that's something that I have to be aware of, that all Sagittarius have to be aware of. So I'm looking for the Gemini. Where is the Gemini? My moon sign. Jupiter and Saturn conjunction in Aquarius with the North Lunar Node in Gemini expands your worldview and triggers profound changes in your spiritual life, educational trajectory, or country of residence, or all three over the coming year. Mercury conjunct Pluto on January 4th may be your moment of truth-telling. Some hell or high water, hurt feelings or not, your bottom line needs to come to light and will push its way out if you don't open the door. Taking the high road is your best bet when Mercury enters Aquarius on January 8th and conjuncts Saturn on January 9th. I'm taking that week off, by the way. Malka, what's your sun sign?
I thought it was just Brandy and I on today.
Well, who's laughing at that? It sounded like Malka.
Hello? I'm here. What was the question? What's my sun sign?
Yes.
I don't know.
What's your birthday?
April 18, 1956. I think she's an Aries.
Well, no, April 26th. That's a Taurus. It's on the cusp, which is there is no cusp in Judaism, so we would have to look it up. But why not look at both of them? The Aries and the Taurus.
Well, that's a tough sun sign. I know, right? I'm telling you, that's a toughie.
Well, I thought I remembered when we looked it up for you was that you were a Taurus.
Yeah, I think so too. The 26th. Mm-hmm. We'll read Taurus first.
To pull them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Taurus in Aries, not in Aries, in Pisces.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking Jupiter, of Barbara Maxey. Okay.
Jupiter Saturn conjunction for the Taurus amplifies and emphasizes your career and your public professional life. In 2021, you're a rebel without a cause. Venus enters practical, pragmatic Capricorn on January 8th and trines Mars on January 9th, inspiring harmony and sinking desire with appreciation. Personal vulnerabilities may see the light of day when Venus squares Chiron, the wounded healer, on January 12th. Though you're not inclined to make trouble for trouble's sake, you'll gladly get into good trouble when your values are at stake. You may have this chance on January 13th when Venus trines rebellious Uranus. You've been awoken. It's very hard to wake up the Taurus. Aries.
I'm a troublemaker.
No, you're not a trouble. Taurus is very much a home. I don't want to say a homebody because it's a bad description. But your home and your family is very much. Your comfort zones are very much important to the Taurus. Now your Aries, Jupiter and Saturn conjunction enlarges and defines your sense of community. The first quarter Aries moon on December 22nd at the winter solstice is a new birth, seeing its very first fruits. Break barriers when Mars squares Pluto. You can now overcome that final stubborn obstacle. Mars enters Taurus on January 6th, focusing on your material world values and valuables. Your personal growth is money in the bank as you take on a mature view of your personal resources. Mars squares to Saturn on January 13th asks if you are properly appreciated by your community. You desire acknowledgement.
What date is that?
The last date in it's a sign of Aries.
I know, but what was the date of the last thing you read? January
Mars, what? Mars squares Saturn on January 13th.
13th, okay.
Just keep in mind, this is not Hebrew astrology.
Right.
Even though it was written by a woman who projects herself as a Jewish astrologer, and she does, but she's very much related to the Western astrology.
Mm.
She does make some adjustments for the various some of the historical perceptions, but not all of them. And she does not bring into the 13th sign, although she did mention in one of them that I read about Chiron, which is not a planet but a meteor, like Halley's Comet. To comet. So are you glad you asked the question, Brandy? Or did
sure.
you wanna not or did you wanna not know?
You know what? It's gonna be what it's gonna be, and that's the way it is. That's just life.
Spoken like a true Scorpio.
And I want to know the website. That's a true Aquarius. I got to read it myself with my handout in front of me.
Well, if you want, I will send you a link to it.
Okay. It wasn't Jill Hammer by chance.
No. Jill Hammer's, she and this astrologer, we're putting on a whole program today, all kinds of different subjects, but it costs like $26 to listen to them or get the recordings. But they all, I forget who this is, what her name is, but you can go to jweekly.com/2020/12/18. Then it's the title is The Great Conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn, Good for the Jews, with hyphens between every word. That's what I read, essentially.
Well, I haven't gone out to look at the sky yet because it was just getting dark at 5:30, so I was going to wait a little bit before I went out.
Oh, my God.
Well,
it
says,
the newsman said that 7:30 in our area would be good for it, but you know, on the horizon to kind of look. But we have clouds, so unless they move out.
Well, now I'm going to give you one final lesson on this subject.
Okay. Don't listen to the newsmen.
No. Are you aware that once a month the Jewish people go out and bless the moon? Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah.
We know that.
Mm-hmm. It's done between the 7th day and the 14th day, and it's usually done on the Shabbat that falls between the 7th and 14th day of each Hebrew month. Motzi Shabbat.
The door. The ritual.
I'm sorry?
In our...
Yes, the rituals and all the siddurs. So when I was studying with Rabbi Berg in the early 90s, and you know, and I was doing it with the Kabbalah Center, we would go out, and it was in Los Angeles, but he would do this in all of the areas. Wherever he was, if it was time for the new moon blessing, they would go out and look. And if it was cloudy, he would say, wait. And then he would focus all of our intention on moving the clouds so we could see what we needed to see. And it always happened.
That works.
It always works. Consciousness prevails.
It works. If you want
to see it,
I would have blown.
Focus your intention on spreading those clouds, and it will happen. Everyone have a beautiful evening.
Okay, thank you.
Now, how do I describe this? How did I describe this on the recording title?
Who knows? Good luck.
Let him be shocked.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, everybody.